Welcome to the Gonzo Chronicles. I'm your host, Cyrus Alderwood. Flying solo today. Thanks for Blueshammer for letting me use some music there. Let's turn this up a little bit. Let's get a little bit more before we jump in today's show. Man, good stuff, man. I love blues music. As a matter of fact, I was a part of a blues page on Facebook. Oh my gosh, man. The world's got to calm down. Actually, I unlike the page. I never do that. Because I don't take anything seriously on social media too much. But my God, man. When people have to get argumentative and make politics and race part of music. Dude, I'm gone. Thanks for the show. I'm out of there, you know. Damn shame. There's a lot of cool people on there that post a lot of fun videos and share a lot of good music. And, man, all it takes is a few sour people in this upside-down world to mess up a good time. So, anyway, hope everyone's doing well, man. We've had a crazy week. Obviously, you know, I don't get into politics or any of that garbage on here. But I hope everybody's staying safe in the midst of a pandemic and now riots and... Yeah, protesters, and that's fine, but riots and looting, not so cool. A lot of people work hard in their life to make ends meet and see things get destroyed, man. It's painful to watch. So hopefully everybody, especially if you're in a city somewhere, stay safe. I'm so freaking lucky, I got to tell you, man. I feel like the luckiest man on earth. I don't live in a city. I used to. Lived in Cincinnati for a number of years, and I missed the city, to be honest with you. But, times like these, I'm kind of glad I live off the beaten path and kind of away from people. Hell, even during normal times, I could go to a grocery store and not be 10 feet from the next person. So how about that for social distancing in regular time? But stay safe, everybody. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Hey, this is actually a morning podcast. I never thought I would actually do a morning show, but I got up this morning, came through, turned on the TV, put it on the news for like 20 seconds. I'm like, screw that. I go to the Travel Channel, and then I'm watching, I forgot the name of the documentary, but it's Robert Englund, the guy who played Freddy Krueger. He was hosting it. He's hosting the show. And then I flipped over to the Discovery Channel, and I was watching Expedition Unknown. So I got into the weird right away today, and I thought, you know what? One of the shows that Robert Englund was talking about, one of the topics on that show, they were talking about Cheeseman Park in Denver. And I remember, like, you know, I've read about that. And if you're from Denver, you probably know all about Cheeseman Park. If you're not and haven't watched these, you know, a couple of these shows that I've happened to see this on, you might not know that this popular park in Denver was formerly a huge cemetery. And it's creepy as hell, actually, the story behind it. So I went and did a little digging this morning, and I copied and pasted some stuff, and I printed some stuff off. And I'm going to read probably some of this, just a little bit about Cheeseman Park. And ironically, my nephew just came in from Denver. He was visiting, and I haven't seen him in a while, and I missed him this trip. But he was in for his birthday, I guess, to hang out with his parents and his siblings. And anyway, he's on his way back to Denver today, or maybe yesterday. And if I'd have known this before, I'd ask him if he's been there. But I'll make it a point to ask him now. If you're from Denver, if you go up on the rolling hills or even go have a picnic at this big 80-acre park called Cheeseman Park, a lot of visitors there don't realize that they're walking or sitting right up on the grave of somebody else who was buried there during the 19th century. And because I suppose where this park is at, it's surrounded by Capitol Hill and then these big, huge mansions and right in the heart of downtown Denver. So it's... One of the more popular things that people visit it for, I found out, was this big botanical garden and this big panoramic view that's said to be up there. So I haven't been there. I've just seen photos, but looks like a place to go. So if you're going there, go there. If you happen to see a ghost, holy crap, let me know. You know, and I decided to do this topic, too, because I was talking to a friend of mine earlier, and she was telling me that, like, you know, she was talking about whether she believed that spirits still lingered around in cemeteries. Didn't believe that they did, actually, that they would gravitate more toward their families and stay, you know, that energy would stay in the home and so forth like that. But, you know, what do you think? You know, flying solo today, so if you got some thoughts upon the dead and where they rest, or you have a ghost story of your own, hit me up at cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com. Let me know. I'll read it on the air. Or hell, maybe even have you on the show to talk about it. But anyway, let's get into this park, Cheeseman Park. It's really, really wild history I was reading about this place. The history started in 1858 when a guy by the name of General William Larimer, he actually jumped the claim of the St. Charles Town Company and established his own town, which he called Denver. So he jumped their lease, their claim to it, took it himself. But in actuality, the property didn't belong to the town company either. The land legally belonged to the Arapaho Indians. But you know, no one bothered to ask them about whether they wanted the claim. So anyway, Larimer took it. In November 1858, he set aside about 320 acres for a cemetery, which is now the site of present-day Cheeseman and Congress Parks, because I think between Cheeseman Park and Congress Park, there's something that separates them. I'm not sure exactly what divides it, but I read somewhere that there's like some buildings or something that divide it. So he called it Mount Prospect Cemetery, was what he called it, and had several large plots, and was actually going to separate the plots because he wanted the wealthy and influential on one side, and what he thought were just like criminals, vagrants, paupers, whatever, the poor on the outermost edge. They didn't want to mix them. While the middle class citizens were to be buried somewhere in between. So he really wanted to keep the classes separate. So the first man buried at the cemetery is a guy by the name of Abraham Kay. And he died from a lung infection. So he was buried in 1859. He was the first person to be buried there. But the story most often told, I guess, for the first person that was buried there was a man that was hanged for murder. Because I guess it makes more of an interesting story that the first person buried there was a murderer, but it was not. It was actually a guy who died of a lung disease from what I found. Second man buried there, this is an interesting story, was a Hungarian immigrant named John Stoffel. And actually he came to Denver to settle a dispute with his brother-in-law. And he ended up shooting the man. And this was in April of 1859. And both of them were gold prospectors, so a lot of people thought that he was just there to get his brother-in-law's gold, right? So the closest court was in Leavenworth, Kansas. That's a long damn way away. So they convened a people's court, as they called it, and convicted Stoffel of murder. And he was hanged from a cottonwood tree at the intersection of 10th and Cherry Creek Streets. So if you're at the intersection of 10th and Cherry, or 10th and Cherry Creek, if you're in Denver, every time you drive by there, I wonder if you know that there was a guy literally hanged right there at the spot you're driving through, an immigrant that came through, all over gold, and he was a murderer. So I assume that was the murderer. The story was he was the first one buried, but it wasn't him. Well, anyway, at the outermost edge of the cemetery, it began to fill up with outlaws and vagrants and peasants and so forth like that. So the citizens around there began to call the place like Boot Hill or Old Boneyard. Anyway, let's fast forward a little bit because there are several stories of people in this, some of the research I found that were buried there and how they found their way there. But as you get a little further, let's go back to Larimer, right? So the cemetery got a lot of different nicknames over the years, but it never gained the respect that Larimer intended for it to have. So the influential citizens of Denver, they were most often buried elsewhere at that point. So they left the graveyard to the poor, and criminal, and diseased, and so I guess the upper class really had decided they wanted nothing to do with any of that area. So when Larimer eventually left Denver, Mount Prospect was claimed by a cabinet maker named John Wally. And he was, you know, an aspiring undertaker at the same time. So there was a report, and it was 1866, that said over 600 people were buried in the cemetery at that point. So Wally did an extremely bad job of keeping up the cemetery, and it soon fell into this really terrible state of disrepair. And headstones are toppled, graves are vandalized, and even cattle came in to graze and leave all their mess behind. So some of the legends said that even homesteaders that were coming through started to live on the land, which is kind of weird. I wonder if they knew they were living right on top of dead bodies. But anyway, in 1872, let's fast forward a little bit to 1872, the U.S. government determined that the property where the cemetery sat was federal land. So they come and confiscated it. And they deeded the land to the government and by a treaty with the Arapaho Indians. So they kind of were brought back into it at that point. The government then offered the land to the city of Denver, who purchased it for $200. A year later, the cemetery's name was changed to the Denver City Cemetery. So over time, all right, these separate areas of the cemetery were designed for various religious, organizational, and ethnic groups, such as the Odd Fellows, Masons. Catholics were buried in some areas. Jewish people were buried in other areas. You know, so they kept it, a segregated section for Chinese people, too. And that was over near where all the paupers' graves were. But some of these sections were kept up pretty well by the family descendants and other organizations. But some parts of the cemetery were just left to fall to ruin, which was really sad. And then later on in, let me find my notes here, 1875, part of the north part of the cemetery was sold to the Hebrew Burial Society, who then maintained it, while much of the rest of the graveyard just grew up with weeds and, you know, just looked run down, looked like abandoned property that you'd see today. In 1881, a hospital for those suffering from smallpox was established just south of the Jewish cemetery there, in that section. The hospital was also, it's a terrible name to call it, but it looks like they called it a pest house, where smallpox victims were quarantined and people with other contagious diseases, and they were just kind of left there to die, and then they were, you know, just buried out there after they passed. By the late 1880s, though, the cemetery was seldom used and had fallen even to worse despair. And it was a terrible eyesore, it looks like, to everybody in the city from my notes here. So real estate developers actually began to lobby for a park instead of a cemetery. So they would much rather see the land property value around the area go up. So they said, hey, let's just develop this into a park where everybody can come and enjoy. And before long, a Colorado senator persuaded the U.S. Congress to allow the old graveyard to be converted to a park. And on January 25th, and let me find the note of what year, 1890, Congress authorized the city to vacate Mount Prospect, and in recognition, Senator Teller immediately renamed the area Congress Park. So that's where that park got its name. So families that were given 90 days to remove the remains of their descendants to other locations. And if you couldn't afford to, they begin to transfer bodies to, you know, if you couldn't transfer the bodies to other cemeteries in the city. So due to a large number of graves in the, it looks like it was a Roman Catholic section. The mayor at the time sold 40 acres, to the archdiocese, which was named the Mount Calvary Cemetery. So the Chinese section of the graveyard is placed in the hands of a large population of the Chinese, who lived in the Hop Alley section of Denver at the time. The majority of these bodies were then removed and shipped to their homeland back in China. However, most of the buried people in the cemetery were vagrants, criminals, and paupers by far. So when the majority of these bodies remained unclaimed, Denver awarded, this is where it gets really, really weird, okay? Denver awards a contract to an undertaker by the name of McGovern to remove the remains in 1893. Now, McGovern was to provide a fresh box for each body and transfer it to the Riverside Cemetery at a cost of $1.90 each. So they started in March of that year. Before, and people would come by that were curious. Like, they just wanted to see. You had all these, you know, these rubberneckers there that were wanting to watch and see what happened. So for the first few days, you know, the transfer was, you know, legit and orderly and all that. But then when people kind of fizzled off and stopped coming to watch, this is where it gets really, really macabre. And so instead of using, so this guy decided the way he was gonna rip off the city, basically. So instead of using full-size coffins for adults, he decided he was going to use child-size caskets. They were only about 3.5 feet long and about a foot deep, I think. All right, something like that. So as he dug up these bodies, he had his workers hack the bodies up. And sometimes they used as many as 3 caskets for one body. Because remember, the city wasn't paying per body. They were paying per casket. And that's where he realized, hey, I can make a bunch of money here. And he was willing to share it with the people that he employed. That's why no one was a whistleblower at what was happening. So they would just take saws and, like, saw up bones in half and fill up 3 coffins with one body. So body parts were literally just strewn everywhere, and it was a disorganized mess. Even souvenir hunters actually began to loot open graves and coffins, which is really disgusting. So really dishonoring the dead. Now, in 1893, the newspaper, the Denver Republican, got hold of the story. And the headline there was called "The Work of Ghouls," which is kind of very fitting. So anyway, it was just a terrifying. Why would anybody do that, you know? But anyway, the article, "The Work of Ghouls," it described in detail McGovern's practice of hacking up what were sometimes intact remains of the dead and stuffing them into the boxes. And there's a quote from this too: "The line of desecrated graves at the southern boundary of the cemetery sickened and horrified everybody by the appearance they presented. Around their edges were piled broken coffins, rent and tattered shrouds, and fragments of clothing that had been torn from the dead bodies. All were trampled into the ground by the footsteps of the grave diggers like rejected junk." So the health commissioner got involved in all this. Anyway, 1894, grading and leveling had begun in preparation for the park. Several of the open graves wouldn't be filled until 1902. Without ever having moved the rest of the bodies. 2 years later, in 1909, or actually the park was finally completed in 1907, without ever having to move the rest of the bodies. 2 years later, in 1909, Gladys Cheeseman Evans and her mother, Mrs. Walter S. Cheeseman, donated a marble pavilion in memory of Denver pioneer Walter Cheeseman. The donation was conditional that part of the park be designated as the Cheeseman Park. So it was, and the pavilion is still there to this day. In 1923, the bodies from the Hebrew burial ground were removed and other sites of the cemetery, to other sites of the cemetery, and returned to the city, where the site currently serves as the site of the reservoir of Congress Park. The section once used by the Chinese cemetery was used as the city tree and shrub nursery until 1930. When a public works project converted it to an addition of Congress Park. So it says here the vast majority of present-day Cheeseman Park was mostly the Protestant portion of the old cemetery. A residential community separates Cheeseman from Congress Park. That answers my question from earlier. There you go. So it's estimated, this is creepy, it's still estimated that over 2,000 bodies remain buried at Cheeseman Park. So anytime you go for a picnic in Cheeseman Park, or you hear, I don't know, people say they've heard ghosts. Those living in the surrounding the graveyard, actually, according to this, began to report sad and confused looks, sad and confused looking spirits knocking at their doors and windows, as well as the sounds of moans coming from still yet open graves. Today, these restless spirits are still said to occupy the park as dozens of tales continue to be told of paranormal activities taking place. Many visitors tell of feelings of unexplainable sadness or dread in a place. And that's today. Anyway, people have seen children playing in the park during the night. They've seen outlines of old gravestones, shadow figures, misty figures wandering around. Now, that is creepy as hell. And I thought, wow, right there in Denver. Like, how could that happen in Denver? So I started doing some digging. If you live in a city, you might want to look up just like, is there a park that used to be a cemetery? Just Google it and see what pops up. Because I started just Googling. Stuff was popping up from everywhere. Here's one I printed off before the city of San Francisco voted to stop burials within city limits in 1900. There were at least 30 cemeteries in use or abandoned here, including one right on the spot of what is now Dolores Park. Today, there's only two cemeteries left inside the city limits, the San Francisco National Cemetery and the Presidio and the Mission Dolores Cemetery in the Castro. Most of the deceased residents previously buried in San Francisco were moved to cemeteries in San Mateo County between 1900 and 1940 to the town that would eventually be known as Colma, which now carries the distinction of having more dead residents than living. There are over 2 million bodies buried there. Only 1,500 is roughly the population of the place. Unfortunately for anyone trying to find burial records, this migration from San Francisco to Colma was spotty. Some bodies were exhumed and buried in mass graves. Others were transferred to new coffins with incorrect information. And others were left behind in their original resting places. So where were these San Francisco cemeteries, and that you ask? Well, there's the big four. Actually, what I'm going to do, I'm not going to get into these because I know that there's quite a few of these in different cities. I'm going to post these on the Gonzo Chronicles page on Facebook. So if you are on Facebook, jump over there. I'm going to post the link so you can find these. And eventually I'll gravitate these over to CyrusAlderwood.com. I really need to do some updating on the website. So no better time than the present. It's the weekend. I should probably go buy some cold ones, and that should be my evening. We'll see. There is actually a weird legend where I live, near where I grew up, in Bristol, Virginia / Tennessee. It goes right across the state line. The state line separates the city. There's a place called South Holston Lake, and I should probably look this up. But I've always heard that, you know, it's a man-made lake. They had to flood the area, so they had everybody evacuate, and they exhumed as many coffins and, you know, cemeteries as they could. However, a rumor has it that when they flooded the area to make the lake, bits and pieces of old houses, broke and came up. Coffins eventually popped up to float on top of the water. Now, I don't know. That's creepy as hell. But it could be true. I mean, there's so many man-made lakes, and there had to be, you know, people living there that had to be relocated, one would think. But, yeah, that is very creepy. And when you think of Cheeseman Park, if you're listening to this and you've actually had an experience, man, I would love to have somebody come on the show and talk to me about what they've experienced at a park or a cemetery. Actually, we're going to have some folks from the Virginia Paranormal come on soon. I just need to call them back and set up a time. And we're going to talk about some of their experiences and their investigations. We're also going to talk about one particular place that I have a fascination with. I'm considering actually writing a book about. It's a location called St. Albans in Radford, Virginia. That's been on many television shows. It's been on Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Ghost whatever, you name it. There have been so many people that have come there to investigate that particular location that says it's incredibly haunted. Actually, in one of my books called Dark Places, it's a collection of short stories in the horror genre. there's actually a story called St. Albans. I just made a horror story up about the place. But in the short story, I bring out some of the, I talk about the history of the location. That's actually the history of that location that I put in the story was actually true, because it does have a very dark and deadly past. And, you know, every small town has secrets. Every city has secrets and legends, like this, you know, what we talked about with the cemetery. But, you know, when you think about your own hometown, you know, even every house has a history. Think about what's in your hometown. If you have any creepy, cool stories that's in your hometown, hit us up here at the Gonzo Chronicles and let us know. Would love to hear those stories. There's so many of them out there, and so many undocumented. Even with all the stuff that we hear on podcasts and television and blogs, I mean, there's still so many stories that people haven't told that probably should be told. But anyway, here's a short little clip of the Gonzo Chronicles, a half hour. I squeezed this in. Thanks again for stopping by, folks. I appreciate you hanging out here with the Gonzo Chronicles. I'm Cyrus Alderwood. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and on, you can find me on Twitter also. Let's get a little bit more music going here. You can find me on Twitter. Facebook, just looks up the Gonzo Chronicles on there. You can find me as Cyrus Alderwood on there too. And CyrusAlderwood.com. Hey, and also on the next episode, who knows when I'll do another one. Probably pretty soon. I've been lazy lately. Glad to get back into doing a few of these. There are some independent authors that I really want to highlight, too. They got some really good books out that you definitely might want to check out. And speaking of graveyards, there's a book called Dig'em, D-I-G-G-U-M. And any other time, I'd remember the guy's name. But because I've left a comment and a ranking on Amazon about a grave digger, and one of the most incredible stories I've heard in quite a while, I've read in a long time. It's Dig'em, D-I-G-G-U-M, and yeah, I remember that cat's name. I'll post that up on Facebook, too. Thanks again, everybody. Have a great Saturday. Tune in later. Hell, I may do another one later on today.